Presenter is Claire Margers, am I pronouncing this right? Margerison? Margerison Zilko. She's an assistant professor in epidemiology and biostatistics, and her research examines the relationship between macro and individual level social and economic factors in maternal and child health. Her research also focuses on understanding the determinants of racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic disparities in perinatal and early life health.
Thank you. Happy to see everybody so early this morning. And those last two presentations were really great. And I feel it's going to be difficult to follow, but hopefully you'll hang in here for a little while longer. So I'm going to be talking today about some research looking at residential mobility in the postpartum period. So and I don't have any disclosures, and then I also just want to thank my co-authors at the University of Texas at Austin and also at UCSF. So for a little bit of background, one area of my research is in understanding how neighborhood social and economic characteristics and factors affect perinatal health, and there's a lot of interest in doing this in general. And one way to do this is by using geocoded addresses from the birth certificate or from birth records to identify women's neighborhood around the time of birth. And in particular, there's an opportunity to do this by linking postpartum surveys such as the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System to birth certificates. So PRAMS is a state, it's a statewide representative survey of women in the postpartum period. It's done in, I believe, 40 states as well as New York City, so it covers 78% of births in the U.S. currently. And the benefit of this is that it is a survey that asks women a whole host of questions about behaviors and experiences during pregnancy and the postpartum period. And so it provides a much richer amount of data compared to the birth certificate, but it's linked to the birth certificate, so you also get those the variables as well. And so there's interest in using this combination of two data sets to look at neighborhood factors by using the woman's address on the birth certificate to identify her neighborhood. However, up to 50% of women may move during the first year of their infants' lives, according to previous research. So hopefully they don't move quite like that. So these addresses from the birth certificates might not provide very accurate measures of a woman's neighborhood during that postpartum period. So there are quite a few studies of residential mobility in the perinatal period in general during pregnancy and in the first year postpartum, and they show that women do tend to move, but most of these studies don't examine whether and how women move between neighborhoods. So we're really focused on understanding whether these addresses from the birth certificate are a reasonable measure of a woman's neighborhood. So what we want to know is, does she move out of her neighborhood? Not does she move down the street, but does she really move to out of her neighborhood or to a different type of neighborhood? And there have been only a couple studies that have looked at this. The first one that came out recently was in a clinical sample from Rhode Island. So it's a very good study, but it has a small sample size. And then there's another very large study from Sweden, but we know that country doesn't have the same kind of racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic diversity that we have here. So our aims were to assess postpartum neighborhood mobility patterns in a large representative sample. And we chose to do this using data from California, which I'll explain in a moment. And we wanted to examine whether women who do move out of their neighborhood in the postpartum period move to neighborhoods of higher, lower, or similar socioeconomic status. And then third, we wanted to understand whether mobility patterns differ by the mother's own characteristics, race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, or demographics. So the data that we use come from the California Maternal and Infant Health Assessment, MEHA. So this is basically California's version of PRAMS. It's a little bit different, but it's very similar. And we use data from 2003 to 2007. And I mentioned this before, but this survey, similar to PRAMS, is an annual statewide representative survey of women who've recently given birth. It is linked to the birth certificate. And so our analytic sample was over 16,000 women with addresses accurately geocoded to a census tract, which is our measure of neighborhood, at both birth, so that's from the birth certificate, and at postpartum, from the MEHA survey. So we had access to information on that women provided their address when they filled out the MEHA survey, and they did that to get an incentive. Okay, so the way that we characterize neighborhood socioeconomic status, we used an index based on a principal components analysis. This has been previously published. We used five different variables that represent kind of different aspects of neighborhood socioeconomic status. So the percent of people in the neighborhood who have a blue-collar profession, the percent of adults over 25 with less than a high school education, median family income, median housing value, and the percent of adults over 18 who are unemployed. And so we created an index based on those variables, and then we categorized neighborhoods as being low SES if they were in the bottom quartile, and then moderate if they were in the middle two quartiles, and high SES if they were in the highest quartile. Okay, so then for the individual women, we defined them as having residential mobility if they had moved to a different neighborhood between the time of birth and the time of the postpartum survey. And so that's not, we don't know if they moved down the street, but if they moved to a different neighborhood, they were defined as being having residential mobility. For those women who did not move to a different neighborhood, we put them into three categories. So they either lived in a low SES neighborhood, moderate, or high, and they lived in that neighborhood at both time points. And then for the women who did move to a different neighborhood, we put them into several different categories. So women could have moved from one low SES neighborhood to another, from one moderate SES neighborhood to another, from one high SES neighborhood to another, or they could have moved to a lower SES neighborhood. So if they started off in a high SES neighborhood and they moved to a moderate or low SES neighborhood, or if they started out in a moderate SES neighborhood and moved to a low SES neighborhood, they were categorized as having moved to a lower SES neighborhood. And same thing in the opposite direction for moving to a higher SES neighborhood. So we ended up with all these different categories. There's five here and then the three that I showed you before for women who didn't move neighborhood. Okay, so I'm just kind of going to jump to the very main findings. And the most important finding that we had was that 86% of all women did not move to a different neighborhood between the birth and the postpartum survey. And so this is good news because this means that for most women, the neighborhood that they live in based on the birth certificate is a reasonable measure for linking PRAMS or MEHA data. 7.5% of women did move out of their neighborhood, but they moved to a neighborhood of similar SES. So if they lived in a low SES neighborhood when they gave birth and they moved, they ended up in another low SES neighborhood. 4% of women moved to a neighborhood of higher SES, and 2.8% moved to a neighborhood of lower SES. So of all these 16,000 women, only about 7% moved to a neighborhood with different SES between birth and the postpartum survey. We did see differences in residential mobility by maternal characteristics. So on the y-axis, you see the percent of women in each category that moved to a different neighborhood. So you can see that mothers who were less than 22 were the most likely to move to a different neighborhood. Broken down by race, ethnicity, non-Hispanic black mothers and U.S.-born Hispanic mothers were the most likely to move. And then across education groups, women with a college education were the least likely to move. So we did see that the most disadvantaged mothers were the most likely to move, which implies that there may be some measurement issues here, because most women aren't moving. So in general, we can say that the neighborhood from the birth certificate is a reasonable measure of the neighborhood during the postpartum period. But if we're concerned about these types of characteristics, we see that there's some differential measurement error. Another finding that came out of this study that wasn't even one of our aims and is well known, but I think important to emphasize, is that, don't focus on the graph for a minute because it's very busy, but basically what this shows is that we are very stratified in the neighborhoods that we live in. So if we focus just on the age groupings, the top light blue column or gray column, part of the column, is represents the percentage of women in each category living in a high SES neighborhood, and the light blue part of the column at the bottom represents the percent living in a low SES neighborhood. So you can clearly see that mothers who are less than 22 are very unlikely to live in a high SES neighborhood and much more likely than other mothers to live in a low SES neighborhood. Similarly, if we look by race ethnicity, we see that Asian and white mothers are quite likely to live in a high SES neighborhood and very unlikely to live in a low SES neighborhood, whereas black and Hispanic mothers, especially the immigrant Hispanic mothers, are very unlikely to live in a high SES neighborhood and very likely to live in, and much more likely to live in a low SES neighborhood. And then we see a clear gradient across the education spectrum, with mothers with less than a high school education being very unlikely to live in a high SES neighborhood, and mothers with a college education, college graduates, are almost none of them live in a low SES neighborhood. So, you know, we came into this being very concerned about, like, are women moving in and out of their neighborhoods, and is there measurement error? And I think what this shows is that the biggest issue really is that the most disadvantaged women are living in the most disadvantaged neighborhoods. And so this really reemphasizes just the importance of doing this type of research in general to try to understand how these disadvantaged environments might be impacting disadvantaged women, because it's unlikely that disadvantaged environments are impacting advantaged women because they're not living there. So there are certainly some limitations to this study. One is that women completing surveys closer to the time of birth had less opportunity to move, so we're working on some other methods like hazard survival analysis to try to take that into account. We also don't have information about where women live prior to giving birth. So we know from the MIHA survey, 30% of women do self-report that they move during pregnancy, but we have no idea where they move. They could have moved down the street, they could have moved from a different part of the state, or, you know, we don't know that. And then we also don't know, or we didn't look at, whether women moved within their own neighborhood. So there's a couple implications to this. One is that moving itself could be a stressor, but that's really not what we were interested in. But, you know, depending on the size and type of neighborhood, you could potentially have different types of exposures if you did move within your neighborhood. But again, that really wasn't the focus of the study, but it's important to understand that's not what we were looking at. Okay, so in conclusion, and I said all of this already, but just to reemphasize, we did find that most women did not move out of their neighborhood in the first early part of the postpartum period. So we think that the geocoded addresses from birth certificates can be used as a reasonable estimate of women's neighborhood SES during the early postpartum. However, mobility is higher among less advantaged mothers, and that should be taken into account or at least considered. And then our final conclusion, what I was just discussing, is that this study really reemphasized that less advantaged mothers live in lower SES neighborhoods regardless of residential mobility. So just to thank our funders, particularly the American Cancer Society, and I'll end with a little cartoon that demonstrates how I wish I could have moved when I had an 8-week-old baby and had to move across the country, but I didn't choose this method. Thank you.
We've had 3 really excellent talks that cover a broad range of multi-level determinants of health. So I'd like to open up. We've got plenty of time because we had one speaker that wasn't able to join us. So we've got plenty of time for questions for our 3 excellent speakers. So feel free to speak up. Yes. I see a few hands, yes.
I'm moving on, so if anybody wanted to talk to me, a critique of a lot of the work that women's issues that we've done about African American women's health is that it's all negative. Hard, cancer, breast cancer, obesity, and so with African American girls, it's just we're tired of being the problem. But if you study resiliency, they might be at the top again, but in a brilliant way. Mm-hmm. So I think that goes to your question. I mean, right? And right is what it is. Really interesting discussion about we need to have them in the set more so.
Ami, I'd like to thank you for raising that question and for this discussion, because in my own personal work, we're facing that. I do childhood asthma health disparities, and right now my current study is looking at the disparities that occur within the Latino population between Mexican and Puerto Rican children. And my study site is in Phoenix, which, if anybody's familiar with Sheriff Joe Arpaio, there are a lot of socio-political issues that also are impacting the families that I work with, yet their kids are healthy. So it speaks to what's going on. You know, why are those children faring so much better than the children that I work with in the Bronx of New York? So again, it really does speak to the fact that we have a long way to go in terms of trying to understand and define what do we mean by resiliency and how do we measure it and get the evidence and the data so that we can get it into those kind of universally adopted indicators. I don't want to steal time from you. You had a question.
Way of thinking
genetic level, and they found among Hispanics, the more indigenous ancestry you had, I believe it was the shorter your telomeres were. So that kind of points more to something genetic.
I was unclear on what the source of these cuts were. When was that sounds correctly?
Okay, so basically we collected a blood sample when women came in to deliver their babies, and then we just essentially isolated the leukocyte from that blood sample and specifically looked at DNA in the leukocyte.
Was there any thought, I mean, you didn't collect cord blood?
We actually did collect cord blood. In this sample, the cord blood was exclusively used for chemical biomonitoring analysis, but we actually did collect cord blood. And I have actually another smaller study where we're looking at telomeres in maternal blood and placenta,
actually. Other questions? I thought I had seen another hand in the back earlier. Claire, I have a question for you because I think it's really, I have a faculty member that does a lot of neighborhood level influences. So was the overarching kind of purpose of looking at these moves, both, you know, right around pregnancy as well as postpartum, what's the kind of overarching goal? Is it to link kind of the stress of moving combined with the, I guess, quality indicators of the move in terms of looking at impact on health?
Not really. Really, our goal was just to understand whether a dress at one point in time is a reasonable measure
indicator. Got it.
Over a period of time.
Got it.
More like
okay.
A methodological question. I think your question about moving a distressor is very different.
And then quality of the move, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Just needed to clarify. Any other questions for our excellent panel of speakers today? Oh, come on. There's got to be a couple more burning ones. We have lots of time to talk.
Are they all the presentations going to be on a website that we can review?
Yeah. If you had did you sign up for Essential Learning? These have all been audio recorded. And so typically they're available about 4 to 6 weeks after the conference ends. I don't know if it's too late to sign up for that, but you could actually get the audio recordings of this as well as the PowerPoints.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I have a question for Claire. I'm just wondering, did you look at, you said that the follow-up survey was representative of the state population. Did you look at potential selection bias in terms of how good that survey is in capturing follow-up responses from those that are most socially vulnerable?
We didn't look at that in this. I believe that has been looked at least in CRAM, which is their methods are a little different than ours. It's definitely an issue, but I think that
in addition to that, the findings are weighted for non-response, so...
Yes?
Could you tell me how consenting was for your population that you're going through? Is that something that was typical of 1 out of 10, 1 out of 4, 1 out of 10?
Oh, you mean what was the... so we recruited them in the second or third trimester during their prenatal care visits, and we... at that time, so before delivery, we had several interview administer questionnaires. So the perceived social status and the neighborhood conditions, as well as a host of other information was collected either in Spanish or English interview administer questionnaire prior to then at that, it was when they were consented, asked if we could collect their biological samples at delivery, which was done by a nurse. And so regarding participation rates, I'm not sure Rachel, Veronica Boston, of our co-authors in the audience, if you know if we have data on participation rates or the denominator, but I think it was pretty high in terms of the people it passed.
In terms of agreement to participate in the study, yes. The, we have conditions between catching people and labor and delivery. So we have people answer questionnaires because then we had sometimes we had some coverage issues. It was pretty good.
Why did you choose to collect the samples at delivery? So we collected the urine sample earlier in pregnancy. At this, typically at the time the questionnaire was done, we didn't want to have to collect an extra blood sample. And so they routinely collect a blood sample around the time of delivery. So it was, both less invasive and logistically easier to collect it at the time in the hospital. Because we thought, it's both invasive, and we thought we would have a less agreement to participate if we had to do an extra
blood. Other questions, comments? Yes. I hope you have a large team working on that. Uh-oh, I think I know the answer to that comment. Other questions, comments? Well, I'd really like to thank all of you for joining us on a Wednesday morning. We know that those Wednesday sessions can be tough, but I think we had three really excellent speakers, so I want to thank you as well for bringing forward your great ideas and data. Thank you.